Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. Crossland, Corsa and Mokka. Three good reasons to visit the Opel Open Road event.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Question for you next. Have you heard of penis cancer? Would you know what to look out for? It can be a taboo subject, but my next guest is encouraging people to leave the embarrassment at the door and become aware of the symptoms of penis cancer. Ivor Cullen is a consultant urologist and andrologist in both the Blackrock Clinic and Beaumont Hospital and National Clinical Lead for Penis Cancer, and he joins me in the studio. Ivor, you're very welcome. Thank you for being here. Just before we begin, to let everyone know that some listeners discretion might be advised, simply because we're going to be talking about some sensitive and at times graphic medical procedures. So Ivor, to begin, it's an area that has seen huge medical advances over the past number of years, but people just might not be aware of that because you say it's something that people, we don't talk about this.
Yeah, thanks very much, Claire, and it's great to get an opportunity to discuss this. It is a rare cancer. You know, maybe about 40 or 50 men per annum are affected by it each year in Ireland, but it does have quite devastating consequences for them.
And it is a sensitive subject and it's rarely discussed,
which is
why you feel we need to talk about it.
Absolutely. You know, there are lots of things that can go wrong with the penis, and perhaps the most devastating is penis cancer. And a lot of people, when they do develop changes or abnormalities with the penis, they might be a bit more reluctant to attend their GP or to look into to seeing what's exactly going on. But as with most cancers, early detection is really crucial. And I'd like to get the opportunity to highlight some of the concerns some people may have that might indicate a potential serious problem with the penis.
So let's talk about that then. What are the signs then that something is wrong?
Well, interestingly, in people that are circumcised at birth, we don't usually see penile cancers developing. The presence of a foreskin is probably one of the most significant factors in penile cancer development, particularly when the foreskin becomes tight and develops a condition called phimosis. In normal adult life, the foreskin should be able to retract over the head of the penis. But in some situations, one can develop a tight foreskin which becomes non-retractile. We think that this leads to the build-up of kind of infection and inflammation, cells turning over rapidly, and when with this kind of mix, cells can start to do funny things and cancers can develop.
Okay, so what should people be looking out for then?
So I'd say one of the most important things is to remember that penile hygiene is very, very important. I think it would be very positive if we got the message out there that retracting the foreskin and cleaning the head of the penis is a critical part of daily hygiene. In some countries like Japan and Denmark, there are very active public health measures promoting that message.
Mm-hmm, but we don't see that in this part of the world.
Not so much, no. It's not uncommon that I will see people in adulthood with very tight foreskins that have been causing them problems for quite a while, and the patient or the individual might not have even known that the foreskin is a retractile organ.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite remarkable. So when this situation, the inflammation I discussed, develops, one might often start to feel a hard lump underneath the foreskin. Sometimes there can be a discharge from the end of the penis. This can sometimes be malodorous or bloody. So I would say that any kind of change under the foreskin or any feeling or hard lumps at the end of the penis need to be seen promptly. They're not all cancers. There certainly can be infections, thrush infections, bacterial infections that can mimic the appearance. But I would recommend that anyone that develops changes or problems with their foreskin, their head or their penis, that they do attend a health professional promptly.
First stop GP, would you say?
I would, yeah, I would. Oftentimes, you know, all that's required is a topical steroid or a topical antibiotic or an encouragement about maintaining better hygiene. But sometimes a referral is made on then to someone like myself, a urologist, and sometimes a circumcision is necessary in these cases.
Okay. Do you advocate circumcision as a general rule, Ivor?
This is an emotive topic, and I appreciate and respect that a lot of cultures do perform circumcision at birth. In Ireland, we don't do that. I'm an advocate of circumcision for medical reason. And it is rare that a circumcision is absolutely necessary. There are certainly some conditions where the foreskin can become problematic and medical circumcision is necessary. But in the main, problems with the foreskin can often be managed with topical steroids, stretching and so on. And we must remember that the foreskin is a sensitive part of the male anatomy. And for the vast majority of people, doesn't cause any problems.
So just can we go back to cancer of the penis again? I mean, if it is diagnosed, is it a devastating diagnosis? Would you describe it as such?
I would, yeah, I would. They're not two words that you hear commonly put together. It's not a cancer like melanoma or breast cancer or a bowel cancer where everyone in the community knows someone who might have been affected by it. It's not something you read about in newspapers or magazines. We don't see celebrities coming forward with diagnoses of penis cancer. So it is not something that men are comfortable discussing or even mentioning, or sometimes men don't even know anything about it. So that leads to this reluctance and oftentimes, unfortunately, these delayed presentations.
And what is the treatment then?
Well, the mainstay of treatment for penile cancer is surgery. In the past, that surgery often involved partial or even total amputation of the penis. The good news is that nowadays, in 70 or 80% of cases, we're able to do reconstructive techniques that involve just removing the part of the penis affected by the cancer and reconstructing things to lead to a satisfying a life with the penis. So this is what we term phallus preserving surgery.
Okay, and but removal, is that the first option? Is that the only option?
It is, yeah, it is. For invasive tumours that are affecting the penis, surgery is the mainstay of treatment. There are very early stages of penile cancer where topical chemotherapy creams can be used. But for the more invasive options, really the option is the scalpel and surgery.
So removal then and reconstruction.
Yeah. So what we do for the more common operations that we do might be what's called a glansectomy, where we literally take the head off the penis or the glans penis. But we will create a neoglans or a new glans penis using some skin graft that we harvest from the thigh. And they do take some time to heal, and it doesn't look $1 million straight away. And in fact, it never looks as good as it was before the condition developed. But, we've evaluated our outcomes, and we get very satisfactory, functional and aesthetic outcomes from these procedures.
So men can resume a normal life, a normal sex life?
Yeah, and that's the key point. With most of these surgeries, we will only be taking a part of the penis away. And in a lot of cases, we can leave the erectile bodies of the penis. And as we recreate it into the shape of a penis, an erection and a sex life and a satisfying sex life is absolutely possible.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I can imagine that you have patients who are going through so much, a very difficult time physically and emotionally, and are just not able to talk about it.
That's just it. It's great that the National Cancer Control Programme in Ireland has funded the centralisation of this rare cancer, because it's through programmes like this that we'll be able to develop the expertise. Because, I'm only part of a big jigsaw. Perhaps the most important people are the nurse specialists that I work with, mm-hmm. that make the phone calls, that counsel the patients, that see them afterwards.
And do you know for certain what causes this cancer?
Well, as I mentioned, a tight foreskin, poor hygiene, inflammation. Interestingly, the human papillomavirus is
HPV.
Also a causative factor. Yeah, absolutely. We've looked at Irish data, and somewhere between 50 and 60% of Irish penile cancers seem to have coexistent infection with HPV. Now, whether it's the isolating causative factor on its own or whether it's part of the process that causes the cancer formation, we're not 100% sure.
So what do you think will happen once we have HPV vaccination up and running for a generation?
Well, hopefully I'll be out of a job or a little bit less busy. Yeah, it would be great to see that.
Do you really believe that it will have that level of impact?
Well, when I see what it's done with cervical cancer in Australia, and what it's doing with head and neck cancers, I think, rolling out vaccinations to young males was a brave and a courageous decision of the Irish government, and I think it's to be applauded. And it's great that it is across both sexes.
Okay, I have some messages coming in from listeners. One, is circumcision surgery associated with erectile dysfunction?
No, it's not. The foreskin is a sensitive organ, and certainly there are people that will report that the glans penis or the head of the penis can be less sensitive after a circumcision. But when it's done for medical reasons, you know, and when people are evaluated afterwards, for most people that have a circumcision done for medical reasons, their sex life is made better by the procedure.
Okay, a listener in Kerry says, I was circumcised over 10 years ago. I had consulted many doctors about it, but they either dismissed the problem or weren't sure what to do. Eventually, the foreskin got so tight that I had to be circumcised. Do you think that there's a lack of awareness, Ivor, amongst the medical profession about this?
I do. I do, absolutely. And, you know, it's through an engagement with primary care and discussing these issues, I think one of the big things that we could do is start a little bit earlier in the classroom and rolling out public health information about maintaining foreskin and penile hygiene and getting that message out earlier in life would be a really positive development.
Mm, because we have good, huge campaigns when it comes to breast cancer and cervical cancer. Do you feel something on the same level is needed here?
Perhaps not on the same level, because it is a lot rarer, as we said, you know, 40 or 50 a year. But at the same time, there are, penis cancer is just one of many medical conditions that can affect the penis, and there is a little bit of an information and knowledge gap there among the general general population, and also among medics as well.
You describe some of the symptoms that people should look out for. Now, are you saying that you should be very worried if you're experiencing those symptoms, or are you giving some hope and saying that those problems could easily be solved too?
I think in a lot of times, you know, those symptoms like we discussed are often not anything sinister or serious, but they do need to be checked out. The problem with this is that sometimes people will bury their head in the sand. Mm-hmm. There can be a reluctance. They might be concerned. Gosh, is it an STI? Oh, you know, I can't tell my GP about it. Or, you know, there's a lot of sensitivity around penile problems.
And that delay, sitting at home, feeling embarrassed about coming forward, that's what can cause the damage.
That's what causes the damage, unfortunately. We can get excellent cure rates when the cancer is confined to the penis itself, or when there's some very early spread of the penile cancer. But when it has become a metastatic elsewhere, unfortunately, it's not a cancer that's particularly sensitive to systemic chemotherapy or radiotherapy.
Why is that?
I don't know, really. Just some cancers are what are
don't
termed,
respond.
Yeah, are more sensitive than others.
And what's the relationship, or is there one, between penile cancer and testicular cancer? Are they two completely separate cancers?
Completely separate. Penis cancer is, in effect, a skin cancer. It's a squamous cell cancer. These are these same cancers can affect anywhere on the body. And you'll often, there are many people that are affected by squamous cell cancer, but when it occurs in the penis, it becomes a little bit trickier.
Okay, a theatre nurse for 37 years has texted us to say, I'm so glad to hear this information being talked about. And this is an issue right across men's health, that there is a reluctance to talk about issues that aren't quite as sensitive even as Ivor.
Indeed, and you know, this is the point. Some cancers get a little bit more airplay than others, but mm-hmm. sensitive things that we don't feel comfortable talking about, doesn't get a whole heap of it.
Ivor, thank you very much for coming in. Ivor Cullen, consultant urologist and andrologist, and 51551 for any messages there. Let's take a break.